Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Boundaries. There are always two sides to a boundary. Is one right, the other wrong? It always depends on which side you're on. Boundaries themselves have a good and a bad side. Observe them too strictly and life becomes dull. Cross them too often and life becomes reckless. Somewhere in the middle is the path of balance. Coming up, a call for balancing the boundaries of the wild places. When I return, here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I want to welcome you to our second immersion into the dreams of the future wonder. We continue on the Wildside News talking about wilderness. As you know, this is the 40th anniversary of the signing of the Wilderness Act, and the focus on America's wilderness is definitely in the spotlight. Just yesterday, the Campaign for America's Wilderness released a beautifully written and illustrated report, a copy of which you can download from their site through today's show page on the Wildside News. Wild How Long? 12 Treasures in Trouble presents a clear definition of specific lands deserving of inclusion in our wilderness system. To help us understand its spirit and purpose is Mike Matz, the Executive Director of the Campaign for America's Wilderness. Mike, welcome to the Wildside News.
Good morning, Sydney. It's nice to be with you.
Well, it's always good to talk with another fellow Minnesotan. There's something that happens that I find so comfortable with.
Well, it's a great state. There are great people there, and they certainly have a nice natural heritage to enjoy. So, yeah, it's a wonderful place.
Well, it's great to have you here. Mike, why this report now?
Well, it is, as you mentioned, the 40th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and as such, it presents an opportunity to continue to build on the National Wilderness Preservation System. So we went around and talked to people across the country in their various states and said, tell us where your special places are that maybe are threatened and in danger of not losing their pristine state. And so they forwarded us to us these 12 areas and then six others that we included in the back. And we wanted to profile them, highlight the features and the attributes and the special characters of the areas and talk a little bit about the threats, too, that were impending.
Well, you've actually produced it's a beautifully produced booklet, Wild for How Long? 12 Treasures in Trouble. And if people want to get copies of this, how can they do that?
You can go to our website at www.leaveitwild.org and download a PDF file of it.
Right, and you can, if you're on today's web page, underneath the image, I have a click here to download report in a PDF format. You know what? That's a great way to do it because we don't have to postage and printing and everything else, and it's beautiful. Well, let's talk about some of the aspects of this report. You know, it seems as if the struggle for wilderness preservation comes down to sort of a tug of war between interests, obviously, and it seems as if there's a theme, and if we could figure out a way to find a balance between these sort of competing values and interests, then I think we can move on and succeed. And the ones that I kind of keep coming across are logging, and then of course mining, certainly oil exploration. We have ATV use, which is creating some problems, and of course, just civilization keeps growing, and it seems as if does that kind of cover the basic themes in terms of what it is that's affecting our wilderness areas?
I think, Sydney, that accurately represents the list of development threats that are impinging upon the natural character of these lands, and in this country today, we have managed to tuck away about 2.5%, about 2.5% of our total national landmass in the National Wilderness Preservation System. It actually goes up to almost 5% if you include Alaska's wildlands. And balance is the key word here. You know, we think that 5% is certainly a laudable achievement, but for future generations, it would be nice to bequeath or tithe to them, say 10% or 7.5%. And that's what we're striving to do, and that's why we're focusing on these areas.
Well, it certainly seems reasonable. And, of course, those of us who have a sensitivity and a concern, this is our, reflects our values, some of the wilderness values that seem to stand out, and certainly the scenic values. I hope America is noted for its extraordinary scenery. We also have opportunities to get away, to just to get out of society a little bit and connect with nature and really establish peace and health in our lives. Then, of course, wilderness areas provide benefits to wildlife. This is maximally critical, and one of the major efforts, of course, are trying to link these various areas together and keep them intact as biosystems. And then, of course, we have the opportunities for recreation, and somewhere within that matrix is what we're going to be talking about today, is how do we find a balance between these issues. Why don't we start out, Mike, why don't you focus on some of those of the 12 that you find representative of the issues?
Well, we mentioned Alaska, and in the western Arctic, west of the big oil fields in Prudhoe Bay, west even of the Grand Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which has been the subject, obviously, of a lot of debate, is a marvelous stretch of Arctic coastline that has incredible arrays of migratory waterfowl. And unfortunately, the Bush administration is reneging on a deal that was struck for balance, for some semblance of balance, in 1998. It is now going to open up more areas to the oil and gas industry for leasing there, and without very many environmental safeguards. So not only are we desecrating this wonderful spot, this magnificent wildlife habitat, but we're doing it in a way that will damage it more than probably it should be. So that's one area, oil and gas development in Alaska's Arctic.
Right, and that fits within
today.
That fits within that matrix of the of some of the challenges, you know, the competing forces. By the way, when you go to the when you download the file, and look at Wild for How Long, 12 Treasures in Trouble, it's beautifully illustrated, and you can see there's a beautiful image here of the expanse of the ocean, and this is invaluable. So, yeah, let's continue. Want to talk about some others that you find important.
Well, in that vein, then, of oil and gas development, there is the Los Padres National Forest in California, which is also likely to become a victim here of stepped-up oil and gas development, unless we take measures to protect that national forest in California. Another area beset by the same sort of threat is Otero Mesa in New Mexico, and the Red Desert in Wyoming, and the Rocky Mountain Front in eastern Montana. All of these areas are potentially going to succumb to aggressive oil and gas leasing by the Bush administration. And really, if economists and others take a look at the facts, take a look at the potential here, there's not a whole lot of oil in these places. It doesn't necessarily reflect the appropriate balance here. The values are more important to protect as wilderness than they are to tap as potential oil and gas resources.
You know, one of the issues for me, and of course we're going to, by the way, hang on, Mike, for the second or the third segment, because we're going to have an answer to this whole thing with the hydrogen car that is here right now. You get hydrogen from water, and this is extraordinary news. And, it comes down to, okay, we can literally take these precious areas that have invaluable resources to us, that once we impact them, well, it takes perhaps hundreds of years to restore them back to their natural beauty and wonder. And the question is it really worth it?
Once they're gone, they are gone pretty much forever. And you're exactly right. There are alternatives that we should be pursuing that would not only be beneficial to our environment, but our economy as well. And that's the kind of alternatives we're proposing, rather than despoiling these key areas, these special places, this natural heritage that we should be able to bequeath to the next generation, those generations that follow us. I think it was Marty Murie who passed away, unfortunately, this past year, who said that, I hope the United States of America is not so rich that she cannot afford to let these wildernesses pass by, or so poor that she cannot afford to keep them. And I think that really sums it up. You know, we have a very strong economy. There are things that we can be doing to reduce our profligate ways, and in the process, save some of these as a present to future generations.
That's absolutely right. You know, it's I guess maybe kind of what we're hoping here is that we can at least put some of these aggressive attempts to penetrate these areas on hold until we really think through this and think about some as a nation, really, alternatives, in particular in terms of energy, because most of this comes down to resource issues. Let's talk about logging, for example, and mining, and logging. And it's not just the trees, but it's also the roads. Why don't you talk about some of the areas that fit within that category?
Well, it's especially, you know, in the Northwest, where we have some of our last remaining stands of old-growth forest, in the Mount Hood area, for instance, outside of Portland. It is a beautiful forest that rings that volcanic geological feature that is snow-covered most of the year and that stands as such a beacon to the residents of Oregon. There is a proposal by locals there, including a member of Congress, to protect some of the forests around that area, including some lower elevation, very biologically diverse areas. And if it isn't, it is potentially going to succumb to the chainsaw. There are other areas that are included in our report, including the Tionesta Wilderness, potential wilderness in Pennsylvania, which is remarkably one of the last remaining stands of old growth in the eastern forests. Most of all of it was cut over in the past couple of centuries, but there is a couple of small patches of old growth there that we have the opportunity to protect before they fall to the chainsaw.
It is the East really suffers from kind of a lack of wilderness areas as compared to the vast open spaces of the West, and so it becomes especially critical in areas like that. And of course, in terms of wilderness, why don't you talk briefly? Of course, we have a pretty educated audience here. You're just kind of singing to the choir, but talk about what the protections offer when an area is designated as wilderness.
Well, it's the surest way to protect the scenic grandeur of any area. It allows for many kinds of activities that are compatible with enjoying this natural heritage, whether it be hunting or fishing or horseback riding or canoeing or kayaking, those kinds of recreational pursuits. But, you know, most importantly, once we tuck those areas into the National Wilderness Preservation System, that's the best guarantee we have that they will remain in their natural state, so that future generations can enjoy them, benefit from them, as we have had the opportunity to do.
Absolutely right. And, of course, when it comes to logging, some people, obviously, hey, I use paper, I use wood products, I build houses, you know, from wood. I use these things, but the question is, where do we draw the lines? Where do we create a balance here? And as it comes, the issue relates to logging. It has to do with roads. Why don't you talk a little bit about the significance of not making sure we don't put roads into these areas?
Yes, exactly, Sydney. Once you punch roads into a particular area, then you create all kinds of problems, whether it be from erosion into streams that then chokes the fish population, or the invasion of exotic species which overcome the indigenous species of plants and sometimes animals. And then additional access to some of these places, you know, oftentimes in some areas results in game violations or pilfering of Native American sites. So with the number of roads that we have in the country today, and certainly with the backlog of maintenance that the Forest Service in particular is experiencing, roads, we have enough roads, and we should probably try to keep the remaining roadless areas just as they are.
You know, I encourage people to go to leaveitwild.org and learn more about the Campaign for America's Wilderness and download this PDF file. It is well worth doing that. Let's talk about a timeline here. What is your mission here? You've got 12 sites. What are you shooting for?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there is about 5% when you count Alaska that's tucked away permanently protected in the National Wilderness Preservation System. In the next couple, 4 years or so, we'd like to see that increase by half again, so another 2.5% or so included. And this year we have the opportunity with several pending pieces of legislation, including some wilderness proposals in Nevada, a wilderness proposal in Washington, in Virginia, the state of Virginia, and in California and elsewhere. And we hope that Congress will be able to act quickly here in the remaining months of this congressional session and then send to the president's desk wilderness bills that he can sign into the law and add, you know, potentially another 2 or 3 million acres this year, into the National Wilderness Preservation System.
We have just a very short time. What can people do to help accomplish that mission?
Well, certainly civic involvement is something that's very important. So we always encourage people to talk to their public servants, their members of Congress, and make their views known, indicate how important it is to them to protect these special places for future generations.
Mike Matz, thanks for coming on the Wild Side News today. We'll talk again many times. This is Sidney Wildsmith. Coming up, the hydrogen car, a dream, a reality, or both, on the Wild Side News.